Ever feel like having a drink but dread the hangover? Or is alcohol part of your social scene but you're really not a fan? So much of our culture revolves around drinking that for those of us who don't, for any reason, it can sometimes feel like we're missing out. If you do Dry January 365 days a year, there's a way to maintain those social connections without compromising your sobriety. Enter non-alcoholic and zero-proof beer, wine, and spirits. Welcome to Speaking Of, The Unbothered Edition with Casey Chapter. Yes, like the book.
Hello, I'm Casey Chapter, and I'm an ex-bartender who's tired of drinking.
And I'm Tristan Wood, and I'm a reporter who loves to drink.
And today, we are speaking to the Gen Zers and Millennials who want to have a good social life, but don't necessarily want to have to get drunk to do so. So, Tristan, living in Tallahassee, it's really hard to find things to do other than going out and grabbing a drink somewhere. I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of social life in this town revolves around drinking.
Oh, I absolutely have. You know, being a college town with three academic institutions here and also being the seat of state government, I think it's neck and neck for the number of bars versus the number of churches we have in Tallahassee, personally. I haven't actually taken count, but I think it's pretty close. So, let me get this straight. What you're looking for is to drink minus the alcohol.
Yeah, so I can enjoy the taste of alcohol. I actually do. So, you know, I like a nice bourbon on a Big Rock or a nice Amaro or even just a well-balanced cocktail. But I don't like the effects of alcohol, and I honestly can't stomach more than like two drinks anyway. So, I've wanted to stop drinking entirely. But I also don't want to have to order a Shirley Temple every time I go out.
What's wrong with a Shirley Temple? That was my favorite drink when I was 5 years old.
Exactly.
On date nights with my parents, you know?
Yeah, like I'm not a little kid going to a restaurant with the family dinner, ordering the little Shirley Temple with the maraschino cherries that I always give to my sister anyway because I don't like how they taste.
Gotcha. So what solutions have you found for this problem that you're having locally? Like, are there good options for that?
Yeah, so I've recently started looking at different drink lists at various bars and restaurants. I have actually found some mocktail lists, and that's how I stumbled upon Joseph Lontop, who is the manager over at Bar 1903.
And I feel like it's a challenge for a bartender not to have any spirit or like flavor profile from a spirit or an infusion, but you make something completely delicious and still leveled by just using juices, syrups, or even diving into zero-proof spirits.
So Joseph's been a bartender for 8 years, and Bar 1903 has their own mocktail menu in addition to their Athenaeum of cocktails through the decades.
Gotcha. So the main question I have is, do they call it a mocktail because people get mocked for ordering one?
It's funny you say that because Joseph actually has some thoughts on that.
I would say 5 years ago, more bars started focusing on non-alcoholic cocktails. And that's almost a better way to put it than mocktails, because you sort of don't want to mock people for not drinking alcohol. So like seeing zero proof cocktail or non-alcoholic cocktail is usually a better way to put it these days.
My bad. So do they call it zero proof because there's no proof I'll have fun while drinking one?
Very funny, Tristan. No, there is actual demand for non-alcoholic cocktails. So when I was a bartender, people would order mocktails all the time, whether it was because they were pregnant or they just didn't feel like drinking that night or whatever other health issue they mm-hmm. might have with alcohol.
Yeah, and I also would imagine like people with certain religious observances, people who practice Islam, certain Christian religious sects. So what would you do when in your time working as a bartender? I imagine you didn't have some fancy mocktail menu when you were working. What would you do?
Yeah, I would literally just throw something together with whatever ingredients we already had. Had a lot of house-made syrups, shrubs, some fresh herbs, maybe a little strawberry lemonade with some basil or something, you know. But it does get a little difficult and repetitive when you don't have a base spirit to work with.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, at what point does it just become, fancy juice that you're, like, mixing up? Is there something, some way I could have, like, one of my favorite drinks is an old fashioned. Is there a way I could get that? Doesn't really taste like juice, but doesn't have alcohol in it.
An old fashioned is like the booziest drink that you can order, really. I actually did have somebody order a mocktail version of an old fashioned once, and I was like, what am I supposed to do?
So yeah, like, it's just like simple syrup and like bitters and some other stuff. I don't know. I'm not a bartender. I just drink it, you know? So I imagine it tastes like a very sugared giant ice cube, you know?
Right. Well, that's where things like Zero Proof Spirits come in. There are actually companies that make quote unquote spirits that are zero proof. Really, it's just flavored water, but it mimics the taste of the alcohol that it's supposed to replace. So that's something that Joseph talked about too, that bartenders are kind of trying to get more into using zero-proof spirits to mimic classic cocktails that people might be used to ordering.
But we are working on revamping our mocktail list and bringing in non-alcoholic, like, bitter bubbles so that we can make aperitif cocktails or daiquiri-steamed cocktails, and looking in at zero-proof tequilas and stuff like that, just to make it a little bit more fun than just giving someone a juicy juice, you know?
You know, that's actually really interesting because, you know, I could actually start drinking tequila with actually remembering the next morning. So I really appreciate that. You know, I like to taste the tequila. You know, I'm a man with refined tastes, but I usually stay away from it. Tequila is pretty dangerous. But now, you know, I could enjoy a tequila flavored drink. That'd be nice.
Yeah. And I mean, also, if, for example, I am used to ordering like a Negroni.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like a super spirit heavy.
Yeah, how is it possible to do that?
Right, like you really do need the non-alcoholic versions of the spirits. Like there's no way to do it without those. Otherwise, it's literally just a juice. And you know, juice is good. I love a good juicy juice. But sometimes I get a little tired of just the sugar.
Now I personally really like a whiskey sour. Personally, and you know, they usually have like egg whites with that and stuff. So mm-hmm. Am I gonna be mixing my whiskey sour with like the sour mix, the like flavored water and the egg white? Like, would they do that for me if I went to one of these bars?
Honestly, they might if they have what you need. I mean, if you can find a nice craft bar that specializes in making craft cocktails and that has a mocktail menu and has the kind of fun zero proof spirits and other things to play with, then yeah, I'm sure a bartender would love to make something like that for you.
It's just a good service that we can provide, honestly. I think it's important to have them on every bar menu, especially if you're a craft-oriented bar. Because if you can think of, again, crazy seasonal cocktails, you should be able to adapt yourself to making an NA cocktail.
You know, you bring up a good point, because I feel as a journalist, you know, a lot of times I'm working, and I'm in social environments where there are sources, there are other, you know, people that work in politics that are at bars and they're drinking, and, you know, I'm working. I gotta talk to them and then go home and write a story, and I'm still on the clock. So these mocktails provide an opportunity for me to, you know, have a drink in hand, be participating, and not be, like you say, standing around with a Shirley Temple in a room full of adults. Like, I'm past that at this point. But it does provide a way to like fit in into like that social situation while still staying on top of my game.
So, time to sign off?
Yeah, I think we're ready to sign off. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank
so
you for
long,
listening.
Farewell. I need to say goodbye.
Cheers.
Cheers, bye. And next mocktail's on me.
You're listening to Speaking Of, the Unbothered Edition. Next up, Casey gets an in-depth explanation of how these drinks get made. And no, it's not just fancy grape juice.
Hello, and welcome to the Speaking Of podcast. I'm Casey Chapter, and I'm here with Derek Captain. Derek, would you like to introduce yourself? Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, perfect. My name is Derek Captain. I am a sales consultant for Winebow Fine Wine and Spirits. So I'm basically a distributor for restaurants, bars, liquor stores, grocery stores for wine, spirits, a little bit of beer, sake, different things like that. I've been in the restaurant industry for over half my life, almost 20 years. Everything from dishwasher to general manager of restaurants. So, been in the industry a while, and now we're finally on the side to sell wine and spirits to everyone else in town.
Interesting, yeah. So tell me about how you got started in this business and how you got to where you are now.
So I've always enjoyed helping people out, cooking, hospitality. I started working in restaurants when I was in high school and came to college and kept that kind of rolling. Found a passion for wine and spirits at a very young age, earlier than I should have. Started tasting wine and building wine menus and cocktail menus and bartending pretty extensively around 2021. Moved to a couple different restaurants and bars and created wine list, extensive wine list, and became certified as a sommelier. Helped them with their menus and their cocktails and try to show cool stuff to the people of Tallahassee.
Very cool, yeah. So today I wanted to talk to you about a bit of an unconventional lens of what you do, which is looking at non-alcoholic drinks. And so I wanted to talk first of all about, you know, why are we seeing this kind of trend, I guess, of people looking for non-alcoholic drinking culture? What is it that you think is maybe driving this?
I think it's health and lifestyle. You know, as I see people moving towards this trend, it's a lot of people that are kind of reel back their vices and try to focus more on staying healthy and the longevity of life, while still maintaining the social aspect of going out and drinking and hanging out with your friends. You know, it's kind of changed a lot since I started. It was, you know, people ask for non-alcoholic stuff. It was, you know, Sprite, Coca-Cola, some juice, maybe a little bit of bitters in the soda. But as we've grown and seen that this is kind of trending in an upward direction, a lot of bartenders and a lot of bar programs are really trying to focus on providing the same quality that they have in their cocktails, the same thoughtfulness that they have in their cocktails, into the non-alcoholic realm, where they're making their own juices, they're making their own syrups, they're making things like verjus, which is like a pressed wine, not pressed juice from really bitter fruit with some herbs added. That kind of adds the punchiness of alcohol, kind of gives you the body and the texture. A shrub, which is, you know, vinegar-based juice, can be used kind of as a replacement for alcohol, but people are kind of moving towards that direction where they want to provide a good hospitality, a good experience for people that are spending their hard-earned dollars. And even if they're not drinking alcohol, they still want that same quality of service and the same quality of hospitality. And so it's really changed quite a bit in the past, I think 10 years is really when it's kind of taken off a lot. You're seeing it all across the board, from wine, spirits, beer, all sorts of things, whether it be non-alcoholic or low-alcoholic cocktails are on the trend, on the rise. It's kind of exciting, but it's also a way for restaurants to make more money when normally they wouldn't, you know, and especially in a time when a lot of restaurants are struggling, they're still trying to figure out how to make their profits and make margins. You know, everyone's in the business of making money, and, you know, water doesn't sell as much as a cocktail does. So they're trying to figure out ways to do that while still providing that experience for people. And it's exciting to see what we're going to come up with in the next few years.
Right, yeah. Especially when you see, you know, trends like the Sober October and Dry January.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon, you know, it's a time for people to reset. You know, both October and January are bracketing the biggest months of drinking that most places have. You know, when you get to family time and Thanksgiving, November, December, those are heavy times where people are with family, they're imbibing, they're enjoying the times, but you sometimes need to reset. Both before and after, and I don't think that's going away.
Right.
Which is exciting.
So to kind of delve more into these zero-proof kind of non-alcoholic options, I know you've talked about non-alcoholic wine before. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of tell me a little bit about, you know, how these things are made and how they're used to kind of mimic alcohol?
Perfect. Yeah, so if we start with wine, there's a couple different processes you could use. One's called reverse osmosis, which basically is using a membrane or a filter that will strip out the alcohol. The heavier, larger molecules of flavoring will stay in the base juice or wine, where when you can filter out the alcohol, it's a smaller molecule, which you can kind of move out of the suspension. You can get it down to less than 0.5% of alcohol. The same thing with beer, same kind of style. There's another thing called reverse distillation, where in spirits, you would make a spirit like you would normally, where you have a still, you heat up the distillate, it goes over the still and evaporates, or once it evaporates, it goes over the still and cools and creates the spirit at the end. Then you take that spirit that's developed, you put it back in the still, and when you boil it off again, the alcohol cooks faster than all the other compounds in the wine or the spirit, and that will basically take the alcohol back out. So you're making two distillations, which costs a little bit more, but you're then taking the alcohol back out of the thing you just made. So you're keeping all the flavors and you're keeping all the most of the body of it, but the alcohol is leaving. There's a bunch of other processes that are a little bit more complicated. I'm no scientist or distiller, but there's a couple different ways that they can do it. Those are the two most common that I've found, especially in the spirits that I've used in the past and the wines that I have. We've got a couple in front of us. This is a really fun one. Germany's actually kind of been on the cutting edge of this cooking off process. You basically would create a higher pressure in the wine. You make a vacuum, basically, or lower pressure, excuse me, and the alcohol will burn off at a lower temperature. So you wouldn't be cooking the wine. You would just be kind of heating up the ethanol that would burn off quicker than the juice in the wine. And so you make a real classic wine, traditional wine with alcohol in it, and then you would just kind of remove it through a distillation process that's pressurized. So this is, you know, German Riesling that's made into a bubbly carbonated product that there's no alcohol in it. It's, you know, it's a completely non-alcoholic product. It's got a nutritional fact label on the back because it's, you know, not classified as alcohol. But it drinks very, very similar to what a sparkling wine would be. It's very exciting to see these things, especially from foreign wines that are coming over. Germany's been kind of on the forefront of it. They've been doing it for about 15 years and have a pretty big market share of non-alcoholic wines and low-alcoholic wines. So they're kind of who we in the industry have been looking to see processes shake out.
Very cool. Also, on the subject, you obviously are talking a lot about wine, but we also see popping up a lot of these ready-to-drink cocktails that are non-alcoholic as well. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Where are these coming from and how is that?
So it's, you know, as the ready-to-drink cocktail trend is ramping up and, you know, hitting full stride, people are not wanting to go out for their cocktails at some point. So you're seeing a lot of what's called ready-to-drink, RTDs, in stores and in liquor, you know, grocery stores, liquor stores. But again, there's still those people that want the same experience without the alcohol. So they do the same process that they would do for the spirits with these two, as well as a lot of other spirits. There's a company called Liar, like the harp, that makes really, really cool non-alcoholic spirits. Another one called Seedlip, where they're using herbs and basically taking the alcohol back out. They're making the spirit and then taking the alcohol back out. And for these, it's the same process, but then they're just adding cola in one case and then a little tonic syrup in the other to give you the feeling of an alcoholic cocktail without having the alcohol in there.
Right, because we talked about balancing cocktails. Mm-hmm. You know, like part of the balance is the booziness that you get from
exactly.
the spirit.
Exactly. You want everything to be, you know, equidistant from each other in the grand scheme of things. You know, you want bitterness, you want tartness, you want acid, you want sweetness, you want alcohol. In wine, you want tannin and red wines. And those things all have to be balanced for it to be a good cocktail or a good glass of wine. And, you know, when you're making a cocktail, a mocktail with non-alcohol or no alcohol, it's hard to get that balance. It's very tricky. And sometimes you got to employ some other techniques to get that that punch, that little bit of edge. And it's intriguing to see where it's going and see how people are getting creative, you know, especially, mm-hmm. you know, cocktail spirits-based first off, but then, you know, with wine and beer, it's a growing market.
And I was gonna, just to that point, I was gonna ask how, you know, this has changed. You've obviously been in the industry now mm-hmm. for 20 years. So how have you seen it change, and where does it look like it's going? What are we seeing come up now?
Like I said, I keep saying I'm excited to see where it goes. I've always been one that thought this was gonna go kind of how it has, and I've, you know, I have friends that have been skeptical about that trend, but as we're seeing, it's happening quicker and quicker every year. And by this, you know, especially by the products you're seeing in the stores, you know, it's still a small percentage, but it's growing pretty rapidly between non-alcoholic beers, 0% beers, wines, ready-to-drink cocktails, and spirits. So
yeah,
we'll see where the trend takes us, and we'll see how crazy we can get with building flavors and building these products.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this. I really appreciate your time and your insight.
Of course.
It's been really interesting.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Speaking Of, the Unbothered Edition from WFSU Public Media. New episodes drop each Thursday, and they're available wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking Of is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.